So while you're in that today, pretty stoked to have Tim on the line. And we've called this session Seduction and Solar Coding. And the reason that we've done that is in a relatively short period of time, Tim seemingly managed to somewhat be very well on his journey to master the whole marketing Facebook ad thing. So for those who don't know, and you know, Tim's going to give you a bit more of his backstory. Tim kind of went from working in a corporate gig, fly in, fly out, running his business, hustle on the side. I still remember when we first had a conversation. It was just over here in this room here, when that was an office. We had our first conversation. You're very wary about whether or not you should kind of join in, whether it's going to work for you, whether it was, you know, the right decision to kind of make. And I remember you, I kind of left it with you, and you decided to take the leap of faith. And you've achieved some pretty amazing things in what, the last year it would have been?
It's not even, since February. So what's that, 11 months? 10 months, yeah.
So the last 10 months, you've essentially completely left your corporate world. You're in the business full time. We just had a chat before the guys jumped on, and you said this last week, or this week currently, is the biggest week you've had to date. And I spoke to you about a month ago, and that was the biggest week that you had to date. And so I kind of thought that Seduction and Solar Coding is good, because not only have you managed to obviously move into your solar coding business full time, which is kicking some really big goals now, but you've managed to find a way to seduce the market into wanting to shop with you in a relatively short period of time. Like, marketing is not easy, and there's still a long way to go to master that. Yeah. However, you've kind of grabbed it by the reins and ran off with it. So for the guys that are on the call, hey, Pete, how you doing, mate? Give us a bit of a backstory. Like, where were you at 10 months ago before kind of meeting us? Like, where were things at for you in life and for you?
Okay. Yeah. So about 10 months ago, I was looking down the barrel of redundancy from my mining job. Been in the mining game for 20 years, since I was about 18. Drive in, drive out in the coal. I'm a diesel fitter by trade. So very hands-on, always down and dirty in the muck. And I'd had enough of it probably about 3 or 4 years ago. Decided to kick off my own business and just sort of fell into the business I'm in now. Ran the business part-time for 12 months. So that was phone calls at lunchtime and smoko and up till midnight, emails and up at 3 a.m. before work, and then doing a 13-hour day and then hustling when I get back home. And it was really hectic, but it taught me how to manage my time really effectively. And at the same time as that, I lost my driver's license. So that threw a spanner in the works too. But February came along, I jumped into it full time and just hit the ground running. I think I spoke to Baz and joined the Game Changers about 3 or 4 weeks before I was due to finish work. And it was a massive, massive thing for me, leaving the mining game. You've got that really secure blanket of money being dumped in the bank account every week. No worries about money whatsoever. Massive income, and going from that to being completely reliant on your own actions to bring it in. And market, Townsville market is very depressed and has been very flat for about 7 or 8 years. So a lot of people said I was mad to get out of mining, but I just saw an opportunity and went for it. And the first 3 or 4 months with, I just focused on marketing with Michael McNish and had some great breakthroughs at the Brisbane Intensive. Anyone who was there probably witnessed a few of those. And yeah, just the transition from tradesman to business owner and trying to not be so hands-on, but still running things and pushing things forward. So like Baz said, about 3 weeks, we've essentially probably doubled or tripled in time size since April. So I've got 3 full-time guys now, and I think we had another 4 part-time guys this week. So we've gone from a crew of 2 to a crew of 7 in about, 10 months. And we were struggling to do one job a fortnight, maybe one job every 3 weeks. We did 3 jobs this week, and I'll invoice about $60,000 worth of work at, on average, probably 55-60% profit margin. So today's a pretty healthy week, and it's good. It's good to be able to take the time off to spend time in the office and not have to be hands-on now so much to drive things forward. We've really taken the advertising and taken Facebook advertising by the throat, actually, and given it a good shake, because we are everywhere. We are all over Facebook. People come up to me that have known me for years and go, I see your ads everywhere. I'm playing Candy Crush on the toilet. And which is pretty cool, because I didn't even know it was on Candy Crush. So,
the thing was too, though, is like you said, like we met 3 weeks before you kind of transitioned full time. And so there was a lot going on for you, because you were leaving this job security, number one. There was the financial security, number two, in a business that wasn't in a position to support you, right? Like at that point in time, it wasn't in a position to support you. And there was the investment of obviously having to come in and work with us as well, which on top of that was obviously a financial and a time investment.
It was like a double whammy. Yeah.
What's that, sorry?
It was like a double whammy at that point.
Yeah.
Good decision. Yeah. Massive decision.
In that early stage, like if you go back in that first couple of months, like what do you reckon was the most important part, or what was the kind of key thing do you feel that allowed you to be riding the wave that you are now? Because I know it's not one thing, but I want to kind of break it down for the guys listening. Like in that first month or 2 months, like what do you reckon was the key thing in terms of your area of, like, what were you focusing on and what were you thinking about?
Well, focus was mainly on lead generation. That was purely and solely just to get the leads coming in the door, because we converted about 75%. So I knew if we can get the leads coming in, we would grow. It was a big mindset shift, because you're leaving that security blanket, and some days it felt like there was more cash going out the door than what there was coming in, and I was living off savings and those sorts of things. So a lot of insecurity came with that. But I came to a realization in Brisbane at the Brisbane Intensive that all the things that I was doing up until that stage were actually, I was doing the right thing. And I suppose doing it by yourself, you second guess your actions and whether or not you're doing things right or whether you're on the right track. But just to meet with other business owners and see the content that's in the online university, a lot of those things I was doing and had been doing for about 12 months. And it was very reassuring just to know that I was on the right track and that there was a support network there. And it was just good to know that, I pretty much guesstimated or fumbled my way into the right groove, and we were moving towards the right direction. So once we started really focusing on Facebook ads and lead generation, it was a really steep learning curve, because as everybody knows, Facebook's a bit of a minefield if you're not used to it, and it takes a lot to get your head around. But once we did, we're generating a really good amount of leads now, and we're starting to get some passive phone calls and cold calls from people who are seeing our ads now, which is really cool.
Yeah, so a couple of questions. Dan's got a question, which I'll get to in a second. For me, what I want to kind of share is one interesting thing that we see, like the work and the effort that we've put into building the community the last 12 months has been huge, right? And this was something that we identified about 18 months ago. Like if we wanted to get to where we wanted to get to, and we wanted to create even better results for our clients, we knew that, or we didn't know, but my kind of assumption or intuition was telling me that we needed to build like a phenomenal support network, like a community that people felt safe to share and could go to. And one thing that we hear a little bit around things from you guys is that there's months that you feel like you're not using the program, right? And this is where I see people kind of get stuck in this bit of a fixed mindset, believing that because they're investing a certain amount of money, they need to use all the facilities all the time to gain the value.
Yeah.
And this is kind of like a belief, I suppose, I want to knock down here, because you're a perfect example that there's been times that you've been fully engaged in the group and fully engaged in the portal and fully engaged in the events. And there's been other times that you've kind of been a bit MIA, right? And outside of that, because the value is not in the day-to-day, the value is in actually the journey. And I know for myself, being involved in groups that I'm involved in, is that I needed to go to the group and ask a question. If I get the answer, that answer often pays for the whole entire year in terms of me not having to fumble and go through and make those mistakes myself. And I think it's an important thing, number one, to realize or to kind of point out here is that the group is there when you need them. And it's important for two reasons. Number one is to actually spend some time making deposits to the group. It's like a bank account. That if you make some time, making deposits to the group, Dan, Karen, Peter, you guys do that. Then when you go to the group to make a withdrawal, there's a lot of equity in the group. Yeah. There's a lot of equity. There's a lot of goodwill. There's a lot of equity. There's a lot of love in the group because you've been seen to be making deposits as opposed to starting off only going to the group to make a withdrawal. That's kind of the first thing I say. And second thing is realize that business is not like a straight line. Like business is very much up and down. And with every business, there's going to be times that are more challenging and times that you need more support and more help. And there's going to be times where it's just kind of like roll your socks up and get stuck in, all right? And be pigeon-eyed focused on executing. Like once you've got the knowledge, like AKA Facebook ads, once you've got the knowledge, it's a matter of getting stuck in and doing the do. Like once you've learned them, there's not a lot more that you can kind of learn. It really is. Once you physically learn how to put an ad up, how to kind of write an offer and how to target a niche, it's a matter of doing your hours and getting the feedback for the market around what's perfecting. Like, would you kind of agree with that in terms of the Facebook ad side of things?
Definitely. It's all trial and error. There's no magic bullet or silver arrow for Facebook ads. You've really got to test and see what works and what doesn't and sort of try and get your finger onto the pulse of what people want. Because I've found it's a very fickle market. Facebook is very fickle. And unless you hit things right, you just won't get any response. And the thing is, that trigger changes as well. So you've got to be consistently sort of moving, trying to chase that trigger that people are looking for and trying to remain fresh on there. So it is a dynamic environment and people's wants and needs change fairly regularly. So you've got to try and keep up with that as well.
Dan asked Tim, what sort of amount have you invested in Facebook ads to get those sort of results, if you don't mind sharing the ballpark figure?
So Facebook ads, I've been spending about $1,000 a month for the last 6 months. Just that's in pure ad spend. I've engaged a third party marketing company out of Brisbane to help write my ads and manage all of that, just purely from a time leverage point of view, because I want to focus on the running of the business. And I've spent a lot of time learning the Facebook ads and learning the stuff that's in the Oplins University, just so purely I can keep an eye on what they're doing and I know exactly when they're writing good copy and when they're not. And I pulled them up on probably half the time and say, this needs to be changed. This isn't good. We need to change here, because I'm living and breathing my business daily and they're just trying to figure it out. They had no idea what I did when I first engaged them, and some of their first copy was terrible. So it was a bit of a learning game, but now that I've got a good bank of photos and videos and all that data that they can tap into now, the ads are getting really good and we're getting a fairly good amount of engagement. So I think you've just got to try and get out there as much as possible with Facebook ads, and you need a decent amount of spend. Otherwise, people don't see you. We retarget all the time. If people don't see you, I think 7 or 8 times now, maybe even higher, they're not even going to remember you. They'll just skip straight through. We all know your Facebook, you just flip straight past anything that isn't engaging or doesn't draw your attention in that first microsecond of seeing it. So you really need to be dynamic on there, otherwise you'll just be ignored. So yeah, about $1,000, which hurts when it comes out of the account, but it pays for itself 10 times over. We get fairly good amount of engagement. So I think at one stage we were getting 2 or 3 leads filled out from our landing page per day. So then it became a task of managing all these leads that we had to service, and you have to get out and you have to quote people and spend time with them, and then that sort of became a big focus. So you've got to shuffle all your times and handle all your times to manage that. So it was a bit of a case of, oh geez, this is what we wanted, now it's here, we've got to figure out how to make it work. It's really good.
I think you raise an important point, is that you learnt you said you learnt Facebook first. I'm going to make a correction, and correct me if I'm wrong. It wasn't so much you learnt Facebook first. Yes, you learnt the platform. Yeah. You actually learnt how to define a niche and create an offer.
Yeah.
Right? Which is more important. Like, we talk about, you guys need to learn things before you get delegate them. And the reason often we do that is that most marketing agencies typically aren't any good at marketing anything other than their own marketing business. Because they don't, number one, if they do understand the psychology, they don't understand your business. Yet a lot of marketing agencies don't even understand the psychology behind buying triggers. And so this is where, like, if you're going through the training in the portal, a lot of what we teach is around niche and offer and message, niche offer, message, niche. Like, actually placing it out on Facebook is pretty straightforward and simple. The real work is defining a niche, creating a compelling offer, like you said, Tim, that often changes quite regularly. And then being able to create copy that connects niche to offer and triggers them to make a buying response.
Yeah.
And once you know that, you can hire somebody to go and run your ads for you. That's pretty straightforward. But you're able to articulate or understand when what they're producing is not like a right fit for your audience and is not going to work. Dan said, like, what's the basic shape of your funnel? So is it like Facebook ads through to landing page, opt-in form?
Basically, we've got Facebook ads, people just opt in, and that takes them to a very basic landing page. And at the bottom of the landing page is a form that sends me an email with people's details, email address, and I call them within 12 hours. That's a rule that we've set up. Once we get a lead, we get straight onto them, we make contact, and then within 24 hours of our call, we try to get out there and make face-to-face contact. Just so we can be seen to be servicing people. We're in a service-based industry, and we pride ourselves on being very efficient at doing that, which people really respond to.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that. A couple of weeks ago, I mapped out our sales conversion cycle. So we went and looked at the last 12, 20 clients or something that we've signed on. And we mapped out, from opt-in, how long did it take for us to get them on the first call? From the first call, how long did it take us to get them on the first sales call? Because we have a two-step sales call, so it's a triage and then conversion call, and then to close. And we mapped out that on average, a client from lead to close is 10 days for us. But the interesting thing that we noted is that the highest conversion was when a client was contacted within 24 hours of opting in.
Yeah.
So, we're generating like maybe 100 leads a week, but we're only probably getting through to around like maybe 20% of those a week. Like, the numbers have dropped off a lot in the last kind of 2 years. People are just not as willing to pick up the phone as what they used to random numbers. But we've tried a whole bunch of stuff around when they fill out a form, hitting them up on Facebook, like within hitting them up on the same platform that they've connected with you on, within the first 24 hours. And we've noticed a huge increase in getting people on the phone and getting them to calling within that first 24 hours. So what is your niche and what is your offer?
So we specialize in heat reflective coatings for roofs and buildings. So based in Townsville, it gets hot here all year round. We had winter this year and it was on a Wednesday. So... it was 38 degrees yesterday, and we do a lot of re-roofs at the moment too. So it's really hot, and people. So we offer our niche is the heat reduction of people's homes, and our offer is reducing their home temperature and reducing their power usage, because power prices and power usage is at top of mind for pretty much the whole country at the moment. We're really riding on that wave, and we really use that as a trigger for people, and we're getting pretty good results. We're competing with a major Australia-wide franchise in Townsville who have an advertising budget of about $150,000. So, I figured if we get the triggers right and we get the right emotive triggers for people, we're getting good conversions, which is all that really matters.
Here's the thing with marketing, right? Is that number one, he who can spend the most amount of money to acquire a client wins. So the more profitable your business is, the more money you can actually spend to acquire a client. Like, you're talking about $1,000 hurting a month right now. Imagine if you guys were spending $1,000 a day on ads.
Well, that's right, yeah.
Right, what ability that has to grow your business. You know, there may be an issue down the track where you actually run out of reach because, you know, and you need to expand because Townsville is only so big.
That's right.
Right, but if you're running a lean and profitable business, you can afford to spend more money on acquiring a client. And provided that your marketing is profitable, you should be, is kind of a simple fact. The second thing, though, you talk about competing against a company is that typically a lot of these larger companies, they're not as agile as a smaller business. It's like, you know, you're driving along on a jet ski and they're on the bloody Spirit of Tasmania and you decide that you've left something back at the shore.
Yeah.
Like, you can turn around on a jet ski a lot faster than what they can on a large cruise liner. And what that gives you is the ability that if you do know how to create, identify a niche, create a phenomenal offer and write good copy, you can make a turn like that when the market changes and be 10 steps ahead of them before they even realize what's going on.
That's just right.
Because of the structure.
We do that regularly, yeah.
Yeah, so Dan says, awesome, thanks, mate. Sounds like a great business and a great service for the community. What's the most common reason that you find a lead doesn't become a client?
Price point. Townsville's very price point driven. We've got the really expensive guys, and then there's us, and then there's a whole slew of, we call them Dad and Daves. So that's just a single man outfit who's prepared to do a job to cover a couple of days' wage, and he'll do it for nothing. And we compete against those guys on a regular basis. But we've positioned ourselves at the higher end of the market. We tell people straight up, we are not cheap. We do things properly, and we charge accordingly. If you want cheap, there's 20 other guys out there who'll do it. And then in 12 months' time, when it goes pear-shaped, we'll come and fix it, and you'll be paying top dollar for it. And people really respond to that. They respond to the honesty and the levels of service that we can give. So usually that's the biggest thing. It's all price point. If we go in at the same price as another competitor, 9 times out of 10, we will win that client. And we regularly send clients who are looking for multiple quotes to our biggest competitors to get quotes. And they generally always come back, which is really cool because that competitor's management team knows all about that tactic and they hate it.
I actually love this. So this takes me back to when I had my cabinet making business. And, you know, back then I was talking to a zinc cladding company yesterday in Perth. It's going to come on as a client. And I was talking about my old business, and I was realizing that back then, like, I really didn't know much about business, but I did a couple of things really well. At the time, the intention behind them wasn't what I see that they possibly could be now. But they've done well. And one thing I used to do is, we were in the top end of the market, and I used to say to clients, I'd be like, look, I am not the cheapest and I'm not the most expensive, but I will give you the absolute best job.
Yeah.
Right? And I literally just spoke that out because it was the truth. Yet what happened is, these people would hear this the first time I quoted them, they'd go and get other quotes, and they would find that I kind of sit in the middle range. Now, when I mean the middle range, I was between top and bottom, but I was more on the top side than I was dead middle on the bottom. And what that actually meant is, to them, looking back now, is, oh my God, this guy is genuine. He's authentic and he tells the truth, because he told us this was going to happen. So looking back now, I can see how that was a massive win for our business. And we won. We won 80, 90% of the jobs we quoted on, yeah, being more expensive than other people, because I believe we had that honesty. And so I think that that's a really good thing to lead on. In that is, like, we're not the cheapest, we're not the most expensive, but we'll definitely give you guys the best job. And when they go and get other quotes, which typically they will, especially in the trade space, they have to remember that, because that is not something typically the trader would say to them.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. People are very wary of tradies lying to them, and people are very wary of what value they're getting. So upon startup, I decided that, okay, I'm going to build the business based on honesty, reliability, and integrity. So we only speak the truth. We turn up when we say we're going to turn up. And our integrity means if we need something done to fix any dramas, it gets done without any qualms. And We get comments from people saying all the time that they felt that they could trust us from the word go, and that we did everything that we said we were going to do. And in the industry that we're in, that really carries a lot of weight, and I'm always focusing on adding value as well. So if somebody wants something done, they want gutters cleaned, or one of our cash cries is whatever it takes. If you have to wash the dog to get the job, or bake a cake for the lady, or sit there and listen to 3 hours of war stories, that's what you'll do to get the job, and whatever it takes. So, and it really resonates with people. So we're in the people service business. So you've got to really serve people and be humble about that. Otherwise, if you're just...
Are you guys retargeting people that have looked at your form, or even people that have opted in with those testimonies and case studies around how trusting and reliable and how good of a job you've done?
Yeah, we have. So the website's only just gone live in the last couple of weeks. So I didn't really have anywhere for all those testimonies to go other than our Facebook page. So now that we've got the website up and running, I'll be going back to a lot of those people for those testimonies, because I've found people will read a lot of those and place their thoughts on you on what other people's comments are, which is pretty powerful.
Where do they go once they opt into the form? Where do they go? Like, what's the thank you page look like? Is there anything on the thank you page?
It's a pretty basic thank you page that says just thanks. Someone will be in touch shortly. If you want to contact us, it's got our phone number and email address there. So if people want to, because sometimes I'll get a phone call from someone and say, hey, I've just sent you an email. I've just filled in your form, but I don't want to wait for you to get onto me. And the next thing, my phone will bing that the form has turned up. So usually that's a sign that somebody's ready to commit, and we get out there straight away. And some of those we've converted in 4 or 5 hours. We're there the next day starting the job, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. So let's change the thank you page. The reason being, the thank you page and an opt-in form is actually the most valued real estate that you've got.
Okay.
Right? Because someone that lands on a thank you page is committed, and we don't want them to see thank you, we'll be in touch soon.
Okay.
What I've been working on is this concept of like the sales room. So, you know, like when you go to a business and like a physical business, maybe like a tire shop or something like that, the good ones, when they sit you down in the waiting room, they've got like a coffee machine, they've maybe got their values up on the wall, they've got maybe certificates of people they've done work for, they've got testimonies framed, right? And you kind of get a bit of a sense or a bit of a feeling that you're in good hands. So what if that thank you page was almost like the sales room? And what I mean by that, when they land on there, the whole page is filled of testimonies, of jobs, of pictures, of things you've done, of videos they can watch. Like the whole entire room is just future proof of how freaking amazing you guys are.
Yeah.
Right. So like I'm talking like they can just scroll forever, and there's just more and more and more testimonies, more and more images of jobs that you've done.
Yeah. Yeah. That's powerful.
Right. You can have on the very top, like, thanks, you know, thanks for sending your details. We'll be in touch soon. While you wait, check out what you can expect from us below.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that'd really make people warm and fuzzy, which is what they're looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Warms them up. So let's fast forward then. So we talked about the first few months, and we talked about marketing, looking down mastery marketing. What I'm curious to know, and maybe the guys here are, is like, how have you managed your time? Because the biggest challenge that I see in the early stages of business is when we go from being like 1 to 2 to 3 employees, that initial step, and how we manage our time. Because what happens is, you know, we're doing a good job, we're getting out there, wanting to grow our business, so we go out and chase more work, but then we have to deliver it. And then if we hire people to deliver it, we're going, well, I need to chase work. Or what most commonly happens in the trades businesses is people stop chasing work, they fulfill work, and then a month later, two months later, they're like, oh, I should have got no work again. So they go and chase more work, they get more work in, and in that time, they chew up their profits. So how have you managed to manage your time, and what have you put in place that has allowed you to consistently grow over the last 10 months?
Grind. I just grind, to be honest. I get up early and I stay up late, and I do whatever needs to be done to get to where we're going, just because I'm so driven to get there. Because I'm used to working a 12-hour day and coming from what I was doing prior, 8 hours in the 8 hour day for me, I used to work that before I had smoko. So I've got a pretty good ability, I suppose, just to keep going and do those longer days and just get up early and do what needs to be done before the kids get up. But I've really focused on taking myself out of the process of doing the work when I'm not required to be there. So I've got to trust my tradies to do what they need to do. And sometimes I have to remind myself that I don't need to be there to supervise everybody. They can do work themselves and just delegate what isn't a high level of requirement for me to handle. So I keep my finger on the pulse very tightly, and I'd like consistent updates from everybody during the day, and I'll call everyone to make sure that everything's rolling smoothly. But I don't need to be on the front lines anymore. I try and steer the ship from behind the scenes and just make sure everybody has what they need to move forward. And I found that if I can keep the guys on the ground running effectively, then I can focus on the back of office stuff and focus on the lead generation and the processes and all our systemization and putting all that data together and getting things running smoothly. It's probably the biggest lesson I've learned, that I don't need to be there.
When was the transition? Like, when did you transition from being on the front line? Like, obviously you've been on the front line, and then in the back, in the beginning stage, you kind of hustled on the sales and marketing. And what I want to map out for the people that are watching this both live and obviously in the portal as well, is that little bit of a journey, because you've almost gone through the typical kind of journey that we would take people through, right, to that first $1 million mark, which is, up front, you're focusing on your niche and your offer and your message, right? Getting a marketing system in place that's replicable. Once that's been up and running and you're aware of how to create that compelling offer into the right niche, you then outsource the actual management of that stuff, which has freed your time back up. Yeah. So you've been doing that on the side whilst being in the field. And then there's been this transition point where you've transitioned from being in the field to being more back of house and front of house, i.e. doing the frontline sales, but then equal to in the back end, starting to systemize, create processes and procedures, KPIs, and start to manage a team. Like, when was that transition?
It was fairly gradual. I suppose it was thrust upon me fairly early on, because I kicked the business off while I was still working a full-time job, and I was only in town 7 days a fortnight, so... One of my first employees was a works manager, and I just put on an offsider, and basically they ran the business while I was at work in the mine. So I had to figure out fairly quickly how to get those guys running efficiently. So work didn't stop while I was uncontactable at the mines. And just putting systems in place to keep them happy, I guess, and to make sure that they had what they needed to work efficiently. And once I'd finished up at the mines, I sort of came back in all guns blazing and, okay, I'm here now, let's do this. And it sort of upset the apple cart a little bit, because I was there too much. And the systems that we had in place, I was sort of micromanaging a little bit. So it took me a little while to realise, okay, well, I don't need to really micromanage this so much. I can step back a little bit and move the chess pieces around as they need to be moved. So it was, I think I'm pretty lucky that way, that my business had to run without me from the word go. So it forced me to figure that out really early. And now that I sort of regressed back into going full time into it. And now I've started to step back out of it again, just to allow the guys to do what they do best and let them just get on their side of things.
Yeah. Well, it's a good mindset. And I think that's a mindset that we should all have is start with the end in mind. Yeah. For the moment that you start a business it's very much what we would promote is start with the end in mind and start the thing with the intention to exit. So, you know, rather than feeling like you're always having to be the one doing the work, and unless you want it, like if you want to grow a one-man band, that's totally fine. But if you're wanting to grow a business that works without you, start with the end in mind and set things up from the beginning that allows it to happen. And and be willing to do that. That's the hardest part. The hardest part is the willingness. And what I mean by that is it's willingness. But then when it actually comes to the fact of stepping back, a lot of us are control freaks. A lot of us aren't wanting to actually let go of the purse strings and step back and allow our team to kind of move forwards. But if we're not willing to allow our team to do that, why have we got them in the first place?
That's right. Yeah.
I want to share something. I was on a podcast interview with a good mate of mine, Tucky Moore, yesterday, and he shared something really insightful around how he manages his calendar, which I thought was genius. So what he says, like, typically when we go to kind of manage or put things in our calendar, we kind of fill up from Monday, right? And we fill all the way through. What he was sharing is that if we start filling up our calendar from Wednesday and we fill out, it typically means that sometimes we end up with a Monday or a Friday off, right? The other thing too is not just filling up from Wednesday, you know, through Tuesday and Thursday and Monday and Friday, but we actually fill from the middle of the day out as well, right? Which allows us to potentially drop our kids off to school, pick them up. So if we started filling our day from like midday at 12 o'clock and then we go like 1 p.m., 11 p.m., 2 p.m., 10 a.m. and filling inside out, it's going to allow space both at the start of your day and the end of your day and either side of your week to have more time rather than typically what happens, which is we have these scattered appointments everywhere, which means that we're kind of always working.
Always all over the place, yeah.
I thought that was genius. Jump in the chat. Let me know if you think that's as genius as what I thought it was.
I'm just writing that one down. That's a gem.
It's bloody awesome, hey?
It's so simple as well. Yeah.